Today's Teisho will be on Case 12 in the Book of Serenity, Dijong Planting the Fields. Introduction. Scholars plow with the pen, orators plow with the tongue. We patch-robed mendicants lazily watch a white ox on open ground, not paying attention to the rootless, auspicious grass. How to pass the days. Case. Dijong asked Zhuishan, "Where do you come from?" Zhuishan said, "From the south." Dijong said, "How is Buddhism in the south these days?" Zhuishan said, "There's extensive discussion." Dijong said, "How can that compare to me here planting the fields and making rice to eat?" Zhuishan said, "What can you do about the world?" Dijong said, "What do you call the world?" Verse, source and explanation variously are all made up. Passing to ear from mouth, it comes apart. Planting fields, making rice, ordinary household matters. Only those who have investigated to the full would know. Having investigated to the full, you clearly know there's nothing to seek. Zhifeng, after all, didn't care to be made a marquis. Forgetting his state, he returned, same as fish and birds, washing his feet in the Kong Lan, the hazy waters of autumn. Well, here it is, beautiful summer day, not too hot, not too cold. Be doing this beautiful zazen. In a little while we'll have lunch. Then you can take a rest, get up and do some more zazen. This is like a, I don't know, I would say this is as close to perfection as you can get. Right? Some of you are having really wonderful sits and coming in to report things in Dokusan that are just wonderful. This is such an opportunity, and it's so beautiful a way to live, I think. And it's absolutely beyond words to share it with all of you. You're all making a wonderful effort, a superb effort. And it's just a great pleasure to practice with all of you. So, this is, for some people, this is day four, and for some people, this is day two. And there's a big difference between those two groups, because if it's day four, you're sort of on the mountaintop right now. If it's day two, you're maybe starting to get to the top. And basically, if you're going up the mountain still, usually second day of Sesshin is a difficult day. So my saying, this is beautiful, this is wonderful, you might agree and you might not right now, you know what I mean? And if I say, wouldn't you like to live your life like this? There's a part of you that might be saying, no! But, if you've been through Sesshin before, you are familiar with the routine. Day one, people come and their minds are still full of distractions. And if you've been practicing and you've done a few Sesshins, you might get through day one pretty handily. Pretty neatly. And you might be thinking, well, the days of difficulty are behind me. Right? Yeah. think my pain, I think those days of pain are over for me. You know, and then day two, oops. You know, you get up and legs are sore, back is tired, and so on, right? And, you know, so this probably for a long time, I mean, no matter how long you practice, Sesshin is a challenge, is a challenge. And, you know, basically, first 2 days are a challenge for everybody, you know. But, you know, eventually, if you've been through this process enough times, you know that there's going to be a kind of a turn. You know that your legs are going to hurt a lot Tuesday morning or second day. And then you know, basically, that sometime around tomorrow, you're going to feel a lot, start feeling a lot better. And then, you know, you get up on the mountaintop, you've had to walk all that way, and you can stay up on that mountaintop for a while and really enjoy it. You know, when you're climbing up the mountain, you have an image of what it's going to be like at the top. And when you get to the top, may not be anything like what you imagined, you know. And I think those moments are really great. You know, I often say to people that if you could just come in on a Thursday night, sit down and enter bliss, right? You know, just come in, sit down on the cushion, bliss, boom. You know, actually Zen would be like very dangerous practice. It would be like a drug, right? You can just bliss out. So you could rob a bank, you know, come in, sit down, bliss, you know. Now that wouldn't be good, right? If you could come to Sesshin and every Sesshin were the same sort of experience, even a pleasant experience, that would be, you know, a problem too, you know. Every time you go up the mountain, you sort of know what's happening. But every time you get up on the mountain, it should be a little different. And it's important, you know, not to hold on to past experiences. So if you're in day two, my feeling is you should just sort of realize, you know, everybody has pain in his legs, everybody's back gets tired, and so on. And if you're on day four, you know, please enjoy the mountaintop, whatever it happens to be. It may not be quite what you expected. This koan is really sort of a continuation, I think, of yesterday's koan. Dijang asked Zhuishan, "Where do you come from?" Zhuishan said, "From the south." So, two monks. And Dijang said, "Well, how's Buddhism down there in the south?" Zhuishan says, "There's extensive discussion." And Dijang said, how can that compare to me here planting the fields and making rice to eat?" See, I think that's a beautiful spirit for Zen practice, isn't it? It's like a beautiful spirit for Zen practice. On the altar we have a statue of Manjushri and a Wenshu. And Wenshu is holding in his hand a sword. That's the sword of Mu that cuts away illusions. And that's a good image. I often, I like to say, take the sword of Mu and cut away your illusions. But, you know, it's very important to understand that that's just a metaphor. And that what you have to do is not quite like that. You know, it's not really like that. I think maybe I'm going to try to find somebody who can make like a little hoe. You know, a hoe for weeding in your garden? And we'll take his sword away and we'll put a little hoe in his hand. So people from other Zen communities will come here and look inside and, what the heck, you know? And Wenshu will be holding a hoe. See, this is actually maybe better image, right? You know, yesterday I was talking about having a farmer's mind, and I just think this is so important. You know, this practice is often represented in if you read books about Zen as strength, a practice that arises from strength of will or determination, iron determination. And my feeling is that this is just quite incorrect. That really the essence of Zen is based upon kind of deep trust in the world. You know, deepest possible trust in the world. And that this is sort of like the farmer's mind. You know, the farmer gets up every day and he hoes his field or her field and pulls the weeds out, waters, looks for bugs, pulls the bugs off of things, you know. And, you know, so many things can happen. So many things can happen to the plants. And you could get an early a late frost and it could kill the plants. You could get a drought. You know, you could get an infestation of some bug. And if the farmer thinks about it too much, you know, the farmer goes crazy, right? And you know, it's possible if you're a farmer to lie in bed at night and just think, okay, so far so good, you know, there has been rain, but what if a drought does come? And, oh my God, that would be terrible, you know. Or, you know, it's possible that you're in a drought, you know, and you could just sit and worry about how bad a drought it will be. You know, and this is the discussion of Buddhism in where is it, in the South, right? Discussion, a lot of worry, a lot of discussion. You know, I myself subscribe to Tricycle Magazine, but every once in a while I'll open it up and there'll be an article on the future of American Buddhism, and it's just like, oh please. You know, this is like pointless. First of all, no such thing as America. Second of all, no such thing as Buddhism. Third of all, no such thing as future. Right? So don't even bother to read the article. Pointless. Very modern, if I may say so, to try to see, you know, the truth is, the farmer knows that there are many, many things that can't be controlled, right? The farmer knows this. So, you know, basically, you know, you buy the seeds from the seed dealer, or maybe you have these seeds in your family and you plant them. And, you know, they're the best seeds that you could get. It's possible you could have gotten better seeds, you know, but not really. Not really. And it's possible that you could have better soil under other circumstances, but not really. See, and it's possible that you could have a better season, but not really. See, everything happens just as it has to happen. See, everything happens just as it has to happen. If you think about the past life you've led, with all the mistakes, you know, I have made many mistakes. This morning I was sitting and I remembered saying something unkind to my brother when he was just a little boy. I had forgotten about this for almost 50 years. And the event happened about 50 years ago. And I had hurt his feelings when he was just a little kid. And I thought, oh, you know, if only I could go back in a time machine and give him a big hug. But I didn't do it, you know. I didn't. I said a cruel thing to him. And I could remember his face now after 50 years. You know, but the truth is, everything that has happened couldn't have been different. if you had gotten a different kind of education, had a different kind of life, you had a different kind of mother and father, a different kind of personality. Those are absolutely illusions, right? Everything that has happened to you had to happen, right? And nothing can be changed about the past. Nothing is absolutely there. And so people say, okay, fine, I understand that. But the future is different. See, the future is like open-ended. See, this is like a modern idea, right? Future is open-ended. And this is, I think, also really an illusion, but like a huge illusion. Americans actually have this wildly optimistic view about the future. I was just reading this article. Americans have this belief that they have tremendous upward mobility. So the average American thinks anybody can get to the top. And then, all these sociologists do these studies and they find that actually upward mobility in the United States is quite limited. Only a small percentage of people move from one class to the next, move upward. And many countries have higher upward mobility than the United States. But Americans are in like a dream world about this. It's part of our culture to think the sky's the limits. When I was growing up, my parents would say, you could be president of the United States, right? And it's like, okay, in the last election, we had two people who went to Yale, who were both millionaires, running for president. I don't remember anybody from the Navy base in Southern Virginia running for president in my lifetime. So it's just not so. But the truth is, the future is unpredictable for human beings and uncontrollable. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try. I'm not saying, don't take that test next week, But I'm saying when you can study for the test, you can do your best, and then you get the results back and it's a C, right? Or a B, and you wanted it a B or an A. And you can say, if only, But this is like an illusion. You do your best, and then the results are very unpredictable, right? I can tell you, all kinds of stories about people who, 2 years before they died, were, running every day for, 5 miles and doing 50 push-ups and, this sort of thing. And they were looking forward to some kind of a future that didn't materialize. So I'm not saying this is not like fatalism, resign yourself. But there's a kind of a farmer's mind which understands that there's a lot of things we can't control. So we have a different way of dealing with reality because, we can't really control things. And in the absence of control, there's a lot of different ways that you can respond. And the truth is, nobody in this room, nobody can say where you will be in 6 months. You cannot say with accuracy. The probabilities, but with 100% accuracy, none of us could say. I remember seeing a photo of Russian aristocrats, and it was in 1912, something like that. And it was this room full of wealthy, powerful, elegant people. And the photograph was shocking. The caption under the photograph was shocking. It said, "This is a party given by so-and-so in Russia." And in World War II, World War I was just about to start, and at the end of the war, not a single person in this photograph would be alive. Who would have predicted this? So these are like dire, but even in your professional life, you might say, this is what's going to happen to me in 6 months, and somebody, your boss could come in and say, listen, you know, I want you to take that Hawaii job, you know? And, you know, that might be the future. So you just never know. And in the absence of knowing what the future, we can't change the past, and in the absence of knowing the future, you know, we can eat our hearts out. We can be anxious and fearful. You know, we can lie in bed at night and go, oh my God, you know, what's going to happen? Oh, you know. But I think that basically that's a very unhappy life. It's like a very unhappy road. And it's the road most people follow, in my opinion. It's the road most people follow in this world. It nervously planning and plotting and fighting over little scraps, you know. But my feeling is that the peasant mind is like a different mindset. You know, peasants are so interesting to me because, you know, in China, it was interesting, you know. You had a small elite of people who were highly literate, like that they were, we say in English, the Mandarin. And in China, there were hundreds of millions of people, but there were only about 8,000 Mandarin. Like, not even 100,000, like this tiny little number. And basically, people in China who weren't Mandarin were peasants. You were either like in the elite or you were a peasant. And there was no chance of getting out of being a peasant, right? None. And so, you know, instead of saying, oh gosh, I wish I could get to the top, people began to develop a mindset which is like, well, screw them at the top. You know, who cares? But then, you know, they're just up there, they do their own thing. I'm going to live right here and now. I'm going to be a peasant, I'm going to be a peasant. I'm not going to be ashamed of it, I'm not going to apologize. You know, and it created like a strong culture, actually. And by the way, Zen is very deeply rooted in that culture. You know, and the peasant doesn't really have a lot of faith in, chance. Doesn't depend too much on chance. The peasant mind is kind of like a deeper mind, right? It's like you have to take the long view. You know, I realize I'm kind of romanticizing peasants. You know, I know that in China, really, peasants were probably just as mean and selfish as anybody else. But there's something to this idea all the same, right? That, you know, when you give up on controlling the world, when you give up on dominating the universe and controlling the world, you give up on that dream of being like the Mandarin, right? And you just say, I'm no one and I'm going nowhere. See, that can open up a beautiful life. See, that can be like a beautiful life. See, it's so unmodern, right, to think this way. And I'm certainly not urging anybody to quit your job and become a peasant. Right? It's not a wise move. Right? But what I'm saying is that even if you're a scientist or an artist or a teacher or a programmer, or, you know, there's a different way to live, you know. And when we come to Sesshin, we can really experience this way. You know, it's like the past is gone. It cannot be changed. And the future is really not here yet. And our actions will affect events in ways we can't foresee. So you have to take the long view. It's like, it's infinite that way, and it's infinite that way, right? And so on the scale of the universe, you know, whether we actually get a C or a B is not that important. And you begin to have this different mindset about life, different mindset. When we sit on the cushion, you know, we begin to enter what I've been calling, maybe metaphorically, peasant's mind. There's no future. You know, you don't know when the bell's going to ring. And if you worry about the bell ringing, you'll go nuts, right? You just have to keep working with the breath. Stay with the breath. Just this moment is all you ever have. Right? This moment is all we ever have. And then there's another moment, and another moment, and another moment. And we don't know how long that's going to go on, but actually, to think about the future is a kind of illusion. You know, all we ever have is this present moment, over and over again. This is what I'm calling, you know, peasant's mind. There's no chance of advancement. There's no chance of progress. You know, there's no chance of saving the world or saving ourselves. You know, we're just going to be, and people might think this is terrible. This is sick. This is fatalism. You know, but actually, if you just try being in the moment like that, it's so beautiful, right? It's so beautiful. It's a really beautiful way to live. And my feeling is that it's a really freeing way to live. See, I think it's really freeing to live this way because, you know, everybody's trying to get you to worry about things, actually. See, I mean, I'm a teacher, right? And I understand what teachers do, you know. Teachers help people in a lot of ways, but if you're a teacher, one of the things you want your students to do is worry about your course and not the other guy's course, right, or the other woman's course. So I teach, often teach freshman English, and students come to Rutgers and they think, I'm not going to worry about freshman English, that's a bunch of BS. So they don't get any better. So my job is to make them worry about freshman English. And I'm very successful at this. As you might know, you ever took the course. And indeed, you know, people think the course is really good, even though I'm not that loved by all the students who take the course. They all learn a lot in the course. And so, you know, what I do is a little bit harsh, you know, because I make them worry, you know, and you can make them worry by giving them, like, failing grades, right? And they'll start to worry, and then they start to improve. And so, you know, that's my job. And it's part of being a human being. You know? So, but everybody does this to us all the time. It's not just the teachers, it's all the other people too. They're always making us worry and making us worry, think about the future and so on. And after a while, we're just a bundle of worries, right? You know, you have to please all the professors who you carry around in your memory, all the teachers. And you have to please your parents. And you have to please whoever else you respect, right? And you're carrying this increasingly heavy weight around with you all the time. And it becomes unbearable, right, to live this way. You know, constantly trying to fulfill the expectations of others, and constantly worried and fearful, and full of regrets about the past. This is a normal human life. But the thing is, you know, you don't have to live that way. You don't. And when you come here, you can experience a different way of life. I swear to you, I am no one, and I'm going nowhere. And I love it. I love it. There's this really, I'm not trying to achieve anything. You know, just being in this moment with you is heaven itself. The future, we just don't know. But when we come here and practice together, when we sit in the moment, you know, this beautiful, just the sound of a bird is like heaven. Nothing is going to, you know, but this kind of life, this way of life takes great trust. You know, you have to trust the universe. See, the peasant has to trust because, you know, he just can't control anything. She can't control anything. So you have to sort of live on trust, you know? It's amazing. You know, you go to sleep and you get up. And you go through the day and if you're still alive, congratulations, right? That's like the life of the peasant. But you know, that's a life of the Zen student too, right? If you get through this sit, congratulations, you're still alive, you haven't had a heart attack on the cushion, right? <You know? laughs> And so, you're okay, that's good enough, when do we eat? And that's a beautiful life. That's a beautiful life. That kind of simplicity is infinitely precious. And if it, it takes, and by the way, you know, when people get old and their lives are over, you know, effectively, they're over, so to speak, they're retired, you know, they're going nowhere and they're no one. They look back on their lives and they say, why was I so afraid? Why was I so afraid? What was I so frightened of? But we're frightened of failing. You know, we're frightened of all those, of letting down all those people who made us anxious about our success. Right? And again, I'm not saying quit your job, become a bum. It's not, that wouldn't solve anything because, you know, actually, you were a bum, you could be still worried about the future. You know? And you could be, you know, you can be just what you are and have a different way of life. But it takes trust. It takes trust in the universe. And that's where we have problems, right? Because we're so sure we're going to get burned, right? And so a lot of this sesshin is so necessary. Yesterday I said it's so hard to be natural, right? It's so hard to be natural. And because it's hard to be natural because we don't trust our natural selves, right? We don't trust our monkey self. You know, that koan yesterday is great. You know, in traditional Zen, people talk about the monkey mind, right? They say the human has a monkey mind. It sees this, and it sees this, and it sees this, and that's a standard feature of Zen tradition, to talk about the monkey mind. But Zen Buddhists came along, and I mean, monkey mind is a standard feature of Buddhist tradition, this reference to the mind as a monkey. It goes back to ancient India. But actually, Zen people came along and said, hey, wait a minute, why are you insulting a perfectly good monkey? It's not a monkey mind that's the problem, it's a human mind. It worries about the past, it worries about the future. A monkey doesn't do that stuff. You know, you're pinning the rap on the wrong creature, right? Monkey's quite okay. You know, when he sees some nuts, he eats the nuts. If he gets mad, he throws his feces at you. You know, no problem. You know, that's what a peasant does too. You know, peasant throws his feces at you. He's mad. And eats when he wants to eat. Nothing fancy. You know. So this is just this is hard though, to have this trust. And so Zen practice is about, you know, we put ourselves on the line and we wait, we learn how to put ourselves on the line and wait for the universe to help us. See, that's what we're really doing. It's hard to let the universe do the driving. It's hard to let the big mind do the driving. We feel that if we don't worry, if we don't look at the map and we don't worry and plan out our route, you know, we're going to get hopelessly lost, and we don't trust, right? Now, if you're going to on a trip across the country, I strongly recommend you do look at a map and not use intuition. But, you know, the strange thing is once you get going, even if you have a good map, you know, all kinds of strange things can happen. And you may not wind up where you thought you were going. So, you know, this trust is so important. We, you know, you just have to sit there in emptiness and believe the universe is going to help you. The universe is going to help you. Your big mind is going to help you. And it will. You know, it'll help you again and again. And eventually, you know, you'll really be changed by this. You know, I had a cat once whose name was Moon. And he actually was hit by a car during our second sesshin of our Sangha. Jaru was there. And we used to go out at night and do keen-heen on the street. And he followed us, and we were doing our keen-heen, and he got hit by a car. But he was a great cat. And, you know, I had him from the time he was a little tiny kitten. And we would spend the whole day together, day after day, you know. So when I was studying, he would sit right next to me or in my lap. When I was grading papers, he would be right there under the lamp, trying to stay, you know, get some extra heat from the lamp. And it would be like I'd spend 3 or 4 hours grading papers, and then I'd go down and get a snack, and he'd come down, and we'd have a snack together. You know, it wouldn't be the same thing, but. And, you know, we lived like that together, my cat and I, for 18 years. So it was really a wonderful relationship. And we got to know each other quite well. And one, I was thinking this morning, you know, one of the things my cat used to like to do, we had a fence in the backyard. He loved to get on the fence and show me. He could walk up and back. And he was like, look at this, you know. And sometimes he would see sitting on the fence, and I'd put my hands behind him on the fence. He'd be lying on the fence, and it would look like he was going to fall over, so I'd put my hands behind him, right? And he'd lean into my hands. And one time, I just started to pull my hands away a little bit, right, to see what he'd do. And I started to pull my hands away, and he, of course, grabbed onto the wood, the railing. Just one time. And of course, I didn't pull my hands completely away, I just pulled them back a little bit. He started to go down, and then he felt my hands. And then after that, I swear to you, it was like a game we would play, where he'd lie on the railing, and I'd pull my hands back. He never grabbed the railing again, ever. He knew I wouldn't drop him, I swear to you. And I never did. I'd have died before I dropped him. Right? Well, that's the universe. So help me. You know, it won't drop you. It won't drop you. I swear to you. So just trust your true nature. And you say, well, I don't. Just keep going. You will. You will. Dijang asked Zhuishan, where do you come from? Zhuishan said, from the south. Dijang said, how is Buddhism in the south these days? Zhuishan said, everybody's worried about the future. Dijang said, how can that compare to me here planting the fields and making rice to eat, my peasant's mind? Zhuishan said, what can you do about the future? Dijang said, there is no future, Buster. It's just now. It's just now. What about the world? What world? This is the world. This is the world. Source and explanation variously are all made up. Passing to ear from mouth, it comes apart. Planting fields, making rice, ordinary household matter. This is the world. Only those who have investigated to the full would know. Having investigated to the full, you clearly know there's nothing to see. Let the universe do the driving. Zhifeng, after all, didn't care to become a marquis, big shot. Forgetting his state, he returned and became like the fish and the birds. Washing his feet in the Kang Lang, the hazy waters of autumn. Just washing his feet. This is the universe in all its glory. Won't drop you. Won't drop you.